Hello. What you're about to hear is a recording of a Vibrational Voyage radio program interview with Tiger Windwalker. And this was recorded the day after the solstice on June 22nd, 2010. And we're talking in this interview specifically about the solstice alignments and the lunar eclipse alignment on June 26th and how these alignments are potentially playing out now and in the near future. And we also talk a bit about the fact that some of the very important parts of these alignments will continue to develop through the summer and into the fall of 2010 and beyond. Thanks for listening.
Solstice for me was gardening. Gardening and going up to Mountain Lakes, Union Reservoir was up there, and the cloud people were just kicking up their heels, and it was so wonderful, so peaceful. I mean, what price do we give for peace? Something that's actually readily available, but how many people do you ever hear talking about the peace they feel in their life? And I'll tell you, that was very nice. It was a peaceful solstice for me, with the clouds building giant columns on top of each other until they made these thunderheads that extended forever, expansively. Thanks for asking, bro.
No, that sounds really, really lovely. I think I remember seeing, too, somewhere in your book of poems, isn't there a drawing in there? What's the poem that has the drawing with the clouds?
Well, there's the thunder beings. That's a prayer. That would be a good one to read tonight, actually.
Yeah, if you have that, why don't you give that to us? That's a nice place to start.
Okay, well, this is one of the few prayers that I have. Or invocations. And there's actually a story behind it, but I don't need to go into it. If we have some more time, I could tell you about the story, because it would probably apply for what we're doing here tonight. I'll just read you the poem and the prayer. And so since this is an invocation, if the listening audience, the individuals out there, friendly listeners, if you could just take a couple of deep breaths and center yourself, and see if you can align yourself with the spirit of this and what we need here right now on our beloved home planet. This is called Thunder Beings. Thunder Beings, messengers from Great Spirit, thank you for bringing us your crackling light. Thank you for bringing us the energy of creation. As you approach us, carried by your friend Gray Cloud, we await in anticipation. Our hair and bodies tingle as rolling thunder announces your arrival. And now, in the middle of this awesome display, you reach in to touch our hearts and illuminate our origins. We are grateful that you carry the blessing of the Creator. We, in turn, pledge to also bring the light of spirit into the darkness of a sleepy world.
Thunder Beings.
Yeah.
That's a nice one. Now, that was a couple years ago that one came around. If I remember, I think you were telling me, wasn't that an Iva Bell?
No, this was back in Pacific Valley in Wyoming.
Oh, really?
Yeah. But I got to tell you the story, because somehow, for all the seriousness that's going on, I don't feel it tonight, because there's just so much. Like I say, I've been away from home, and I was just kind of blurry-eyed. But what happened, I had an encounter. That poem came to me in Wyoming, and I went back to Salt Lake City, and I had some friends that said, come on, let's go up to Little Oak Tree Canyon or something. We went up there and hiked in the Alpine, and here comes the Thunder Beings. You know, they started to come. I had my flute out, and I was playing on a lake that had mountains on the other side. So the echo the resonance from my flute playing was filling up the whole basin. And it's sometimes I feel I do call. I do call the spirit. Sometimes they're just little birds. But in this case, I have a way that I can call the bigger ones, too, occasionally. So here they came. They came over the lake, and they started forming, and then the lightning started happening and everything. Well, my friend that I was with was really uptight about lightning. So I'm down there reciting this poem across the lake with the biggest voice and you can imagine, something that can match thunder, and, you know, calling out to the spirits. And my buddy comes down and says, no, we got to get out of here. This is dangerous. We got to go. And in that moment, you know, I like to see a big man squirm a little bit. So I said, it's okay. We're okay here. You know, no, we got to go. We got to go, Tiger. You're messing with something here. So
wouldn't be the first time.
I stayed and finished my prayer. And just stayed long enough to push his button some more, and then we vacated the area.
Uh-huh.
But here was the thing that happened, and I think we can get into some stuff here with Chiron too, because our friend Chiron is not exited the scene yet.
No,
and Chiron is pointing exactly where we need to do our healing work, and we can talk about that amongst other things. But anyway, I came down off the mountains, and I was full. I was in a state of ecstasy or an elation, and I came down, and we got in the car and left. And Pat, my friends, were sitting up in the front. I'm in the back, so Pat, my friend, Eddie's wife, she says, "Oh, my neck really hurts." And I said, "Here, let me see if I can help you." So I put my hands on her neck, and it was like this energy. I had stored the energy like a battery or like a capacitor. I had stored the energy from the mountains that had been given to me. And I just put, when I felt that energy, I just put it all into her neck. And it totally healed her. It totally cured her. But that feeling of being a conduit for creative and healing energy is, that's a beautiful thing. And I would suggest that we have that capacity, we puny little human beings who cower before the lightning, we are also sources of incredible power. And in our wondrous interface, when our hearts are open and we have an interface with any element of life, you know, earth and fire and the wind and the water, when we have an open-hearted connection and communion, we can take on that energy and use it in a good way. And so I would just suggest to the listeners tonight that as much as you may feel that you're out of control and that events just keep on, you know, unfolding and they seem to be intractable and impossible, there's the other side, too. There's that other side that we should be aware of, that we are powerful conduits and transmitters of energy.
No, that's a really nice one. Tonight, just before the coming over here to the station, I actually took a nap, and I woke up a little bit late, so I had a few minutes to get ready. And I went outside, and I looked at the moon, and, you know, the moon's about, oh, somewhere around two-thirds of the way to full. It'll be full on Saturday. And I was looking at the moon, and it happened to be right at the midheaven, which I always enjoy quite a lot. And I had some similar feelings to that we potentially, when we're in a state open to it, our experience becomes a connection, a bridge, a conduit to wider dimensions. We open up to that, and in doing that, we join with the energy that's living in our lives, in our world, in our cosmos, in a much more direct and profound way. And that was what was speaking tonight. So what you're saying, it resonates with that completely. And that's one of the things too that your story reminds me of, that somehow we all have this strange, beautiful connection to something greater. And it's always there, and it's available to any of us to actualize, to activate, and that comes about through how we focus our awareness, our attention. And that little thing, just some attention, is what opens up these vast, abundant, beautiful resources. And that's, I mean, that's kind of the mind blower with this whole thing to me. It's the simplest stuff. As you were saying earlier, you know, the value of true peace. It's simple, simple stuff.
Well, yes. And I think we, because we've been ingrained to be skeptical.
Yeah.
We need to prove these things to ourselves over and over again. So on the one hand, there's the curious, innocent child within us who opens himself or herself to the abundance of possibilities out there, the abundance of experience. And, of course, the skeptic comes along saying, show me, you know, kind of like the critical father figure. And we go through these experiences, and we have them. We have these openings that happen, and we need to prove them over and over again so that we can really take the shackles off of our curiosity and our trust, kind of reclaim that, mm-hmm. kind of reclaim our inherent goodness, our inherent power.
Mm-hmm.
And see, for spiritual people, and I keep coming back to, with everything that's happening, that there's a spiritual component here. And, you know, I can name the planets, of course. Neptune and Chiron are together right now, and, you know, they just had a grand trine along with a grand cross. We had a grand trine
mm-hmm.
of Neptune, Chiron, and the moon and the sun. So that's a big component, and it's a hard one to map out the intangibles, because spirit is of the intangible
mm-hmm.
realm. So is ecstasy, so is peace, so is power coming through your body and through your hands. These are things that we can hardly, you know, find words to describe, and yet these experiences happen to us. It's part of who we are, our birthright. And so I'm just, you know, with two deaths in my family here in the last 3 weeks, I ended up actually taking communion in a Catholic church. I'm not Catholic, but the pastor or the father was really a wonderful man. He was certainly not in the ceremony with the memorial for my father-in-law. He was certainly not caught in the trappings of the Catholic Church. He was very easy and flowing in his memorializing of my father-in-law, and very, very real. And I went up to him afterwards and said that I said, I'm not a church-going man, but I sure appreciate your realness. So there's one to let go of. You know, I mean, it's an amazing thing that judgment is a double-edged sword, and it has no handle. Just imagine that for a second. If you're going to pick up that sword, you're going to bloody yourself. It has no handle.
Mm-hmm.
So you really must use it very judiciously, very sparingly. And I'm at a point now in my life where I know the places where I've judged people and institutions and stuff like that. Well, when I come up one like this, where I'm taking communion at the Catholic Church and feeling really good about the, you know, the sacredness of the space and the Father who was there, and you know, I have to tick that off, that box there. You know, oh, okay, no longer judgmental now. And so, and I see that I'm less apt to. I mean, I don't want to grab that sword. And how often do we use it? This is in our political environment right now. We've got everybody lined up.
Yeah.
It's kind of like the battle of the OK Corral. You got the Republicans over on one side who want to do anything to take down the president, and then you got the president on the other side. Just, you know, he's trying to be the commander in chief, you know, and you have all the other folks there that want progressive changes, and you got people digging their heels in, and everybody's judging everybody else, and there's no space.
Mm-hmm.
There's no space to be different. There's no space to be to take the cracker and have communion and see that, there's something bigger going on here. There's something bigger. There's a tie that binds. There's a spirit that's in all of us. And when we can set aside our judgments, we can see the greater truth that encompasses all of our experience. So that's part of what's going on, too, mm-hmm. right now.
Yeah, that's a very good one. Well, excuse me. I resonate really strongly with what you were saying there and your experience at the memorial with having the experience of taking communion. I really feel that that's coming through strongly, that that's a real important connection for these times we're in, like you're saying. And what happens when we get past that inclination to judge, like you're saying? Suddenly we're open, we're in a different state. We're available to what is working under the covers and beyond our expectations, down deep in the foundations of our experience. And there's something wonderful happening down in there. And, excuse me, so that, you know, the thing is, like, you and I have gone so many wonderful places. I've thoroughly enjoyed, you know, every doggone adventure that we've had, every one, to be truthful. I mean, it's been marvelous, all the things that you and I have gone and explored together, lots of places. And then you've gone a zillion other places, and, you know, there's a good number of people, a good array of friends that you have where you go have these adventures. And yet, we can have something that's just as incredible, you know, like tonight, standing outside looking at the moon in the center of the sky, and you having an experience in what may have seemed the most unlikely of places. This somehow breaks through to us in places that we'd never expect. That's pretty stunning.
We got to remember too, Tony, that judgment keeps us apart from life.
Hmm.
That's one of the ways it functions. It keeps us apart. It keeps us out of making the fullest commitment that we can to our circumstances and even to the moment and to our potential. So that's one of the ways that it works, is we keep dealing ourselves out of the game and then standing back and making a commentary about it rather than playing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that also, and I'm not throwing out the planets right now. Maybe you can do that, or maybe we can come back. But I see what's coming also in this, the Grand Cross, that we're just releasing the energy of that right now. Another department that's being pulled in is a greater commitment on our individual parts to make a difference. And that's basically going to happen when we have Venus and Mars conjunct
Saturn. Yeah.
Which is not right now, but it's in this window here of this summer.
Yes.
That's going to continue to expand upon the powerful release that's going on. Now, I just want to say one thing. Again, more it's like a story. I think of the fishermen. I think of the folks down in the Gulf who they survived Katrina, and that was a terrible thing and a black mark on our American history too. The way our own government failed to respond in a good way. But see, these guys have gone through. Now, this is the second big hit that they've taken in a relatively short amount of time. This time, they're looking, the fishermen particularly, what I'm thinking about, are looking at the collapse, the destruction of their way of making a living, and the also the coastline there, the marshes and everything. Once those get fouled with oil, oysters die and the shrimp get affected, and it takes a long time for them to come back, the species.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine what those folks are feeling. This is their turf that they've been, their homes, they've been there all their lives. That ecosystem is part of who they are. They make their living off the ecosystem, so there's a partnership going on there. And these guys were the first ones that wanted to jump out and get going to, you know, save the marshes and the estuaries. And they were way ahead of the game. So I really, you know, I just want to really acknowledge those people. I think more of that is coming. That's what it looks like when the principle of action, which is Mars, and your sense of relatedness, which is Venus, come together in a purposive way toward a goal, which is Saturn. These guys are the way showers for us. And as other things cascade down, you know, other events open up, and we're impacted in other areas, I believe we're going to be, as a populace, as a one humanity, we're going to be called forth to make our stake in the game that's going on. So it's going to be, actually, it would be better to withhold our judgments and see how we can be a constructive addition to the mix and what's going on. It's really important right now that we have to look at the areas where we feel that we can participate and make a difference.
Well, let me just say really quickly, you're listening to the Vibrational Voyage program on KKUP Cupertino, 91.5 FM. Vibrational Voyage comes your way Tuesday nights from 11 until midnight, just in case you're catching it. And you wonder, hey, what's going on here? What are these guys talking about? My discussion tonight is with Tiger Windwalker. He's a poet and a mystic, and he's an author of a recently released book called Walk in Beauty. And Tiger's, maybe we'll get him to share a little bit more of his poetry. One of the things that that ties in with some of the things you were talking about earlier, and the story about being up in the mountains with your friend when the thunder came, lightning came. You know, it seems that there's part of us that has inertia, like your friend Ed. We all have it within us. At times, you know, it becomes slow and fearful, and we want to retreat. And as a whole, humanity has this in us. So it's kind of like we're a fractal. I feel that experience itself is fractal. I think you probably resonate with that as well. So whatever struggles are going on inside of us, we have that also going on in humanity. And there's a certain amount of fear that is great enough to make us, basically the end result of it makes us highly self-destructive. And that shows up in a lot of different ways. You know, if we're fearful, then we're not flowing with our experience. We don't feel connected to it. We feel threatened. And we end up getting angry. And then out of that comes a whole lot of destructiveness. So, you know, certainly we have that. It's kind of a pattern rather than being judgmental, as you were saying. If we recognize it's a pattern we have in our own life and experience and our choices. But it's also a pattern that we have at large working in our world. And something Rudolf Steiner said, he said that 100 years ago, that at the level of our, three things he said. At the level of our thinking, it is as though we are barely awake. At the level of our feeling and sensing, it is as though we are asleep but dreaming. But he said at the level of our will, of our action, of our choices. It is as though we are completely dead asleep. He was asserting 100 years ago that we had no idea what we're really doing, what our motivations are, how we're acting. We're you know, he said dead asleep. I would venture, and he predicted that this would shift, this would change. He couldn't fix a time to it, but he talked about some things that would happen. And what would occur with this, it seems to me, is everything would increase. Our level of awareness around our thoughts, certainly, but also our felt awareness of what's happening in our experience and our sensations. And that has certainly come up for us and increased, I think, in our sensitivity, in our awareness. But now we're starting to realize, hey, there's more to what we're up to. There's more awareness. There's more levels of we participate on so many more levels. And becoming conscious of that is very, very important. We may believe we are already conscious of what we do, but the evidence would seem to suggest otherwise. Not to be critical, but that I just resonate really strongly with what you were saying, and that's what comes out of me in response to what you were describing there. You were saying it's time for us to start to step up and as a humanity and start to choose differently.
Well, I think that sometimes the best way to heal yourself is to heal someone else, because we seem to not be capable of putting that agenda in personal terms. But if we move out into the world and allow our compassion to mobilize us, then often we can have a healing by working externally or with other people. So the reason I say that is that with this planet, Chiron, and being conjoined with Neptune right now and doing the grand trine, we've been having this energy visit us now for well over a year. Back when Jupiter was there, and they were all three conjunct, Jupiter, Chiron, and Neptune.
Yeah.
So there's been a real emphasis there. Now Jupiter's moved ahead, and Jupiter's hanging with Uranus now, the planet of change and adaptation, innovation. So when I think about the Gulf being mortally wounded, and then I think of the fishermen, and I think of the people there, and the people who love birds, and people who just love. Well, I love dolphins and whales, but I love the water too. I love to snorkel and stuff. All the boat owners and stuff, recreational people. And when you think of those people now coming out in droves to make their stake in the game, to heal this thing, to protect it, something that maybe they weren't aware of before, and now they are. A lot's on the line. And this could be a very good thing in the sense that it answers the question about the wounded healer. What are we going to heal now? Or who are we going to heal? And it gets to a point where the people who are wounded become the healers. Hmm. Okay? And that's the whole story of Chiron. It went through this whole struggle of being... In the mythology, you know, was abandoned by both his mother and father, and was kind of a mutant, kind of a freak, and had to live that with that all his life, and with all those challenges before him, became a healer.
Well, and it was the wound that he carried. One account of the story says it was accidental but self-inflicted.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's very interesting and resonant with what we have going on now. Mm-hmm. You know, our world has a self-inflicted wound. We are, you know, as Alan Watts would so acutely point out for us, we mostly live in the West as though we're separate from nature, separate from the world. But, of course, other perspectives would reveal a different point of view that say, no, we grow right out of the world. And I think science certainly bears that out. So at this point, what we have there in our world, not just with the Gulf, but certainly with the wars and with the destruction that we're causing in a mostly unconscious way, is a self-inflicted wound. It's this pattern of perpetual self-harm. And this, you know, the strange, weird, wonderful thing is that at the same time, we're having an awakening to that, and we're having an awakening to the marvelous dimensions that exist in our experience, even in our sickness, even in our dysfunction, even in our destructiveness.
Yeah, we have to prove it to ourselves. You know, we've had little inklings, we've had little experiences, and at some point we need to really trust the process.
Mm.
But anyway, I see a lot of these themes converging somehow, because we really haven't talked about, you know, the major T-square between, we've got the opposition between Saturn and Uranus, which is, we've also had going on for a while. And now the new player, Pluto's come in to square both of those. And so the intent, and the planets are now about to move into different signs.
Yeah.
So we'll have Uranus and Jupiter and Uranus moving into a fire sign, Aries. And we'll have Saturn moving into Libra. So we're kind of ending a cycle there when they were in a Virgo and Pisces. So as we shift the game a bit and give it a more fiery dimension, and then throw Pluto into the mix, we're looking at more intensity. we think you've had it, but let me tell you, there's more intensity coming,
mm-hmm.
and the pot is literally going to boil over onto mm-hmm. the stove.
Mm-hmm.
And and it's almost like, you know, who's in control of the heat? And, oh, we've lost containment again, you know? And, oh, who's going to be the healer? Who's going to clean up the stove? Who's going to get the heat, turn the heat down? That's a good metaphor. Bring it to the kitchen. So we have that portentously looming on the horizon, or actually the energy is being released right now. And it's interesting that that breaking story of General McChrystal,
mm-hmm.
who made the comments about the president, the commander-in-chief, and he's now being called to task. He's being called, and they're going to have a meeting. I think it was on Wednesday they're going to meet.
Mm-hmm.
Sounded like, if you listen to the news today, it was going to happen today. Any minute he was going to, you know, fly in, get off the plane, and go to the Oval Office. But see, we have dramas now that are unfolding that, you know, we don't really know what the outcome is. But I can see in the configurations of the planets, I can see what's going on. I can see that this is all part of the flux and the possibilities. So we can expect things to come from many different areas right now, because the nature of the Grand Cross. The Grand Cross, basically the arms of that cross reach out into all four quadrants
mm-hmm.
of the astrological wheel. So basically we're going to be pulling from all these different areas, and it's going to pull on your heartstrings too. It's going to pull on your sense of commitment and wanting to take action and standing up for what is that you value, you, the listening audience here. All of us, we're going to find that we're going to be inextricably drawn into this drama. Mm-hmm. And we're going to have to, we're not going to be able to stand back and look at it and judge and avoid making a commitment. We will have to come forth in a greater and a greater degree and make a commitment about what's valuable and what we're willing to do to make a difference.
Mm-hmm. You know, the I just want to mention there's some depictions that I created. If you want to have a look at this big Grand Cross alignment and the Grand Trine that was active exactly at the moment of the solstice, which happened yesterday morning at 4:30 Pacific, you can go look at the story and the visuals that are up on my website. That's New Consciousness Rising. You can get there at this address, ncrising.com. And this, I'm going to get this interview posted up there as quickly as I can. I've got this one's kind of a special case because we've got this week, and what's coming up ahead of us is the full moon, which is very significant because the full moon is going to align exactly with Pluto. So basically, we had at the solstice, we had a grand square with the sun opposite to Pluto and Saturn over at the fall equinox position, opposed to Jupiter and Uranus, which are at the spring equinox position. And what's going to happen on Saturday is the moon will move up and be exactly with Pluto as there's a lunar eclipse, which will be exact at 4:30 a.m. again. So it's a five-day spread from the exact time of the solstice to the exact time of the full moon. That's pretty interesting. We'll have a lunar eclipse, and that'll be dead opposite the sun, of course. So that's going to accentuate the energy, what we're moving through right now, and we're going to have a focal point with it. And that eclipse is something that aligns us and pushes us out into farther dimensions, because it's all you know, several different wheels all lining up together, because the moon and Pluto are aligned with the galactic center and the galactic equator, actually. And in addition, we'll have the orbit of the moon and the orbit of the Earth together, and that's what gives us an eclipse. So if you want to look at more on that, you can go to ncrising.com, New Consciousness Rising.
So yeah, that's an excellent presentation you have there. I highly recommend folks go there and check it out.
Thanks, Sagar.
Well, what about that beautiful poem? Do you have that in front of you? I'd like you to read a poem.
Yeah, I put this one up. I've used it in a couple different places. It's my favorite poem, and it's up with the article that I put up for the solstice. And yeah, sure, I'd love to share it because it is my favorite one. And I feel like, you know, these poems and these conversations and all these wonderful experiences that we have, there's something that's growing and blooming through us. So I'm happy to share it, but I share it as a resonance of what's growing in all of us. So here it is. What is the language of the sky? And how do the trees tell of their dreams? We have tamed our ears too well to know. And yet the wild rhythms of the earth still beat all around us. And within our pounding hearts, a resonance can be found. That, so thoroughly forgotten, is not lost, only hidden. Its song surrounds the lyric of everything we do. And that one came to me a few years back. I think that one came around the turn of the century.
Beautiful.
Thank you. And it's just stayed with me ever since. It was one of those that just kind of poured right through, and almost immediately I remembered it. I wrote it down, but I remembered it. It's the only one that I can remember. So I'm happy to share it. Thank you so much for mentioning it. So we have some pretty interesting things that are going on here. A lot of what you're talking about is that, because it's the part of this is going to persist. This is going to persist for months, and I think it's going to leave its mark on us for a very long time. And that's the Saturn opposed to Uranus. That's what President Obama was elected under. Saturn right now is opposed to Uranus and Jupiter. And the thing about Uranus and Jupiter is that the Uranus-Jupiter cycle is 14 years. Uranus goes much slower than Jupiter. So Jupiter catches up to it every 14 years. And you think about it in terms of human experience. What happens to human beings around 12, 13, 14, 15, 16 years old? That, to me, speaks of the Jupiter-Uranus quality. So we have that kind of energy, the Jupiter-Uranus energy, together at the spring equinox point for all of humanity right now in our sky. And that's opposed to Saturn over at the fall equinox point. And that is being T-squared by Pluto. And Tiger, you were just mentioning something that you noticed today, this thing with General McChrystal, which seems to be a real manifestation of this T-square energy, and particularly like with the Pluto and Saturn part of it.
Well, it's its face of Pluto, and let me go into this a little bit. On the full moon that's coming up just in a few days here, with the Pluto conjunct the moon opposing the sun, when I look at that, what I see is the metaphor for birth, and actually it would be rebirth, or regeneration, because that's what Pluto rules. Mm-hmm. Death and regeneration.
Mm-hmm.
So death to the old way. The old ways are Saturn, which is squaring Pluto, and Saturn opposition Uranus and Jupiter, which represents the new way, okay? The life that's been reformed and reinitiated and innovated on, and all kinds of stuff can come from that. And it's definitely a youthful energy. So you got the old cronies and you got the young people. Sounds like something like back in the 60s when we were in the streets, and we do have a, you know, resonance with that in the early 70s also.
Mm-hmm.
And that 45-year cycle. So with Pluto being here, what it really signifies is that on the one hand, we can tell the truth about how things really are and get away from avoidance and dismissal and denial. Pluto helps you tell the truth about what's going on, and it helps us also reveal the mysteries and the obfuscations that have been hidden. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
But it's also good to look at it in terms of a birth-like process, too, because when you understand how birth is, you have a woman that's screaming and appears to be in intense pain,
mm-hmm.
and you know, everything is absolutely mobilized toward a certain end. And, you know, of course, in the end, everybody has a smile. When the baby comes out, everybody's smiling. And they're all happy, but leading up to that, there's a lot of pain and efforting that's going on, and it's very intense.
Mm-hmm.
That's what Pluto's going to do,
mm.
as it makes these angles
mm.
to these other planets. So, and the military is represented by Pluto. So, General McChrystal, he represents Pluto. And he's now squaring, you know, Uranus and Saturn, which are opposed. You have to understand that Barack is both Uranus and Saturn. He said that he had come to bring hope and you know, he was going to make a lot of changes.
Mm-hmm.
And so he presented himself as the candidate who would bring about the basically changes that were needed in our government and our society. But he's also the chief man, so therefore he's also Saturn.
Mm-hmm.
He's the chief,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so with the square to Pluto, it's amazing that here is a challenge from somebody in the military to his authority.
Mm-hmm.
And it'll be interesting to see how this is dealt with. I wouldn't give him much chance of surviving. The last guy that tried this, who had a lot more going for him, was MacArthur in the early 50s, when
mm-hmm.
Truman, when MacArthur wanted to use nuclear weapons against North Korea, and Truman totally vetoed that, and it cost MacArthur his job because apparently he was quite headstrong about it.
Mm.
So this will be interesting to see. And I think all of these right now and what's going on with Barack is that I think he's finding himself, I think he's finding his sense of power. Because everybody thinks that this guy's a great chess player. But to really be a leader, you can't just be an intellectual and figure out the stratagems and the answers. To be a leader, you have to be able to lay it on the line and show people your strength of will, your resolve, and your willingness to act. And I think this has been a challenge for him personally with the golf thing, which was not on his agenda. So he had to respond to something that just happened,
mm-hmm.
which is, there you go, Uranus. It's just, things just pop out. And then you have to deal with them. You have to respond.
Yeah.
So he wasn't in charge of that agenda there, and he had to respond. And I think Barack is growing. And we'll see again now with all these challenges to his presidency, how he matures and how he is able to wear the mantle of a leader.
Mm-hmm.
I
mm-hmm.
think that it's on the line right now, how he's going to respond to this.
Well, I like what you point out there about his evolution. And that Jupiter-Uranus conjunction at the spring equinox point resonates for me that way. And especially when you put it in relationship to Saturn, its opposition to Saturn. Then you charge it with its, because that conjunction, the Uranus-Jupiter, is basically also in a T-square right now with the Pluto and the sun opposition. So it has definitely its evolutionary qualities, and in many ways to me, it seems like revolutionary qualities. So the opportunity would be there, it seems, for President Obama, and certainly for us, too, to be triggered, impacted, and maybe inspired, but certainly moved towards new action, new choices, new awareness, new initiatives, you know, with that, with both of those over in the spring equinox degree. They're basically spread out, actually very tight together, but right around the spring equinox degree over in at the end of Pisces, beginning of Aries. Well, we only have a couple minutes left, so I want to let everybody know they can find out more about Tiger's work at tigerwindwalker.com, tigerwindwalker.com, just like it sounds. And you can also look at depictions and more information about this, and I'll archive this interview at New Consciousness Rising. That site again is ncrising.com. So I'm thinking, Tiger, maybe you have a poem that you can wrap this up tonight, or maybe a few closing thoughts, and I'd love to hear you share those.
Well, I do want to make one cautionary observation. The way we have the planets right now, there's a potential for a nuclear war, and or the use of nuclear weapons. I think it's just something that needs to be acknowledged. There's volatility. There's here, there's a brinksmanship that's indicated here, and basically also a fight to the death kind of thing is here. So I don't exactly know. I mean, there's potentials in North Korea. There's potentials in the Mideast. There's certain potentials that are present that with a kind of volatile situation, there could be a trigger and a release and something like that would happen. And then if that happens, we're, instead of looking at the Gulf as an environment that's going to need healing, we're going to be having to look at the atmosphere.
Mm-hmm.
The air that we breathe is going to be polluted, and of course a lot of human suffering, a lot of poisoning of the land. Also, all of it self-inflicted. These are all self-inflicted wounds, the potential there. But also there's the potential again for a shift in consciousness, and which could be, unfortunately, like I was saying, you know, using the metaphor of the birth, there's a lot of pain and yelling and screaming at the beginning, and then in the end you're rewarded with a new little being who comes into the, you know, and we're trying to birth ourselves into a new state of consciousness, and there's so many things arrayed against that happening, and yet the impulse is very powerful, and I see it. I think Tony and I both see that the build-up to 2012 is a very powerful one, and we're just lining all of these events and challenges up, and you know, we're taking them on, and they're going to force from us a different kind of response. So I just wanted to say that. It's not like really a fun thing to talk about, but I see it there, so I had to say it.
No, I think it's a good thing to acknowledge, because there are many different forces and influences, as you say, at work in where we are. And it would be a horrendous thing for the birthing being of our potential to be stillborn. And I think that we have a hand in all of that. We're both the baby and the midwife and the mother and the father. All of us are in all of those roles. And there is a beautiful blooming and birthing that's going on here, if we will have it. I'm reminded of what John Lennon said, you know, back in the early 70s, war is over if you want it.
Well, I don't know if I could squeeze this one poem in.
Yeah, sure. Go ahead quickly, okay. And we'll wrap it up.
All
with
right.
That.
This is just how I see myself, what, you know, my role is, and it's called the poet. With pen in hand, poised over paper, I am like a dart, ready to stick the target and release the venom of intoxication. I'm hoping to make you dizzy and drool with hot flashes and pounding heart and all vital signs elevated. I want you to feel the elixir invade your veins and incite rivers of your blooded passion. Happy I am to sweep away the congestion of your heart and see you sweat salty beads of your own distilled histories. Let my quill enter your nose and find your brains and pierce what you know so that you can collapse upon the couch of the ultimate therapy. And in your confession, be healed of your dimness and your constant chafing concern for security.
Thank you, Tiger. Thanks for being such a good friend and adventurer and partner, buddy. And thanks for being here together with me tonight doing the vibrational voyage.
Well, all of that likewise from this end here, Tony.
All right.
And thanks for all the KKUP listeners, too, for putting up with us.
Thank you. Yes, definitely. Thank you for listening, everybody. And thanks to Larry Grant. He's granted us a couple of extra minutes here. Thank you, Larry. You're listening to KKUP Cupertino. Please stay tuned for Larry up next with his program, Till Morning Come. God bless. Get out there and enjoy the moon, especially the full moon this weekend, Friday night into Saturday morning. And I'm sure Saturday night it'll be with that energy too. The full moon conjunct Pluto with a lunar eclipse. All right. God bless to all of you out there, and God bless you, Tiger.